ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवद गीता कृष्ण टेल्स अस दैट एनीवन दैट मींस एनीवन जन्म कारमचनेतव्यं एतं लोपिते तत्पता त्यक्तदेहं पुनर्जन्मलायति मालयति स्वच्छं. One who hears the transcendent and understands the transcendental nature of the Lord's appearance and activities in this world will never take birth again, but will attain the supreme highest abode, the spiritual world. Srimbhatam Sukata Krishna Punja Sravana Kirt. That when we take pleasure in hearing these spiritual subject matters, it washes away all of our egoistic, selfish tendencies, which are so deeply rooted in our hearts. So many different forms of austerity, fasting, meditation. Still, these tendencies are very deep rooted in our hearts. But this transcendental sound vibration of the names, the teachings, the glories of the Lord is very powerful. Simply by learning how to take pleasure in hearing transcendental subject matter, it awakens our love. And through that awakening, all of our materialistic, selfish tendencies simply cease to exist. Just like darkness is automatically dispelled as soon as the sun rises, darkness cannot exist in the presence of the light. Krishna Surya Samaya Vaya Andhaka. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught that Krishna is like the sun. Illusion, Maya, and all the misconceptions and all the byproducts of that illusion. Envy, greed, anger, selfish passion, arrogance, illusion. They can only exist in darkness. They cannot, they have no place in light. So when Krishna, when the Son of Krishna rises within our heart, through remembering, through absorption, and all of these qualities, which are the sources of all suffering and misery and conflict, they are dispelled. This is the principle of bhakti. Because there are many problems in the world today. There's nationalistic problems, there's ethnic problems, there's racist problems, there's problems in the name of religion and God. There's problems within households, there's problems in our own minds, economic problems. They are all the manifestations of different varieties of darkness. They can only exist in darkness. darkness within us, then we contribute to the darkness of the world. And when we find light within us, then only can we actually contribute light to the world. Where there's love, there cannot be hate. Where there's humility, there cannot be arrogance. And that must be found within ourselves, and then shared among ourselves. So Krishna descends into this world again and again, so that we can actually have a personal understanding of the ultimate object of our love. And by hearing those stories about the supreme object of our love naturally awakens. Because it's already there. Nityasiddha Krishna Prema Satya Kapunai Saravanadi Siddhi Siddhi Kondivayam. That love for Krishna, love for God, is within everyone. But due to endless distractions and being almost helplessly habituated to chasing after these distractions for our satisfaction in life, we've forgotten. I mean, Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada, and all the saints of the bhakti tradition, they quote a simple verse. That all the instructions, all of the philosophies, all of the rules and regulations and various types of teachings and rituals and practices of all the scriptures are meant to bring us to a very simple realization. To always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. In other words, to allow the sun of our own love to shine, to dispel all darkness. Today is Janmashtami, also called Krishnashtami. The day, perhaps the most celebrated festival in all of India. And by Srila Prabhupada's grace, it's one of the most celebrated festivals in all the world. At our temple, Radha Ras Bihari Temple, Mumbai, there is about 500,000 people that come to the temple on this day. In Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, that's where I usually am. I'm usually either in Mumbai or London. Bhaktivedanta Manor is a wonderful estate that was donated by George Harrison of the Beatles. Because George was such a wonderful devotee. He really loved Srila Prabhupada. My dear godbrother Shyam Sundar, Hare Krishna. Sounds like that voice that spoke to Kamsa. Maybe we'll get to that part. Well, he recently, because he's writing a book about his experiences with Srila Prabhupada, he was there at that time, 1969, living in John Lennon's house. But George was very, very sincere. And months before he ever met a devotee, he spoke to a newspaper about how he had received a record album by Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, chanting Hare Krishna mantra and how he, George and John, they were sailing in boats somewhere in Greece or something, and they were, for 12 hours continuously, they just chanted the Maha Mantra. And they never had any experience like that. Shyam Sundar somehow or other got into a press conference where the Beatles were speaking. This is when they were not even seeing people. George came out, came right up to Shyam Sundar and said, "Where have you been? I've been looking for you." And he understood that only when he saw that newspaper article. During the time they were living at John Lennon's estate, they got a little building just near the British Museum, the street called Barry Place. And Shyam Sundarji, he was from California. He shipped redwood from California to London. He was a carpenter. So he was renovating the temple. And Prabhupada was, he said, "I will stay here in London until the temple is complete." When Shyam Sundar heard that, he reduced the speed of his work by less than half. Prabhupada said, "Well, what's taking so long?" He said, "Well, you said that until it's done, you're going to stay here. We want you to stay a long time." So he realized that to please Prabhupada. But then it was built, and George used to come because he helped. He's the one who actually put his name to rent it, because the Gordons had no credit ratings. So after, within a year, although it was about a 5-story building, it was so crowded with hundreds of devotees. George came and he saw people sleeping on the stairs between the floors because there was no place to sleep. All the floor space was done. And Prabhupada saw that. And he told Shyam Sundar, "Ask George if he can get us a bigger place." So he got this beautiful place called Bhaktivedanta. Very nice grounds. It's an old house, British, Victorian style. And Prabhupada made that his European headquarters. So many of the most common photographs of Srila Prabhupada, that's where he's sitting in the lawn there. And after some time, some of the neighbors, they decided it was too many people coming. So they complained to the government, and the government closed it down from the public. And following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the devotees networked and connected with all kinds of different spiritual and religious organizations, and they had these demonstrations in front of the British Parliament with thousands and thousands of people. It was in the courts for 10 years until finally they got an access road that went close to the highway so it wouldn't disturb the neighbors. And every Janmashtami, which was there a couple years ago, every year it's average 80,000 people. It's very special. So Bhakti Center, I know it looks like a lot of people. But quality is more important than quantity. London has both quality and quantity, and we have some quality. But it's a day when devotees come together to celebrate Krishna's appearance within this world. It's the origin of all birthdays. Happy birthday is a very common greeting. People like to have their birthday parties.
Even in England,
if you live to 100 years old, the Queen of England gives you a special award on your 100th birthday. I don't know how many of them could see the award. It's definitely worth living for. But birthdays are special. Even though the soul is unborn, this is a special quality. We can get into some philosophy.
Najayate mriyate va kadachi.
The Bhagavad Gita tells that the Atma, the living force, the soul that's within all of us, the real self, is never born and it never dies. It never grows old, it cannot get diseased. The Bhagavad Gita said, no weapon can cut it. No heat or fire can burn it. No wind can blow it. It's transcendent. It's beyond material existence. It's the nature of the soul. Asamsijunani yatafiya. That this body is like a set of clothes that temporarily covers the soul. It has a very important purpose if we want to use it for that. So why do we celebrate birthday if we're unborn? Because it's the time when this our particular soul, our true self, appeared in this particular form within this world. And the human form of life, durlabha manava janma lobhya samsare, is so rare because this human form of life, by utilizing it properly, we can realize our eternal nature, our eternal love, our relationship with Krishna, God. So if we use our human birth for its true divine purpose, then it's really worth celebrating. Happy birthday. But actually, you're never born. And in the same way, the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul, the Absolute Truth, Mamaivam Sojivaloke, we are all part and parcel. We're all the children of God forever, eternally. So how is it that God is born? He's not born, but he appears within this world. Karuna Sindhu. Out of kindness, out of love for every one of us. To attract our hearts once again toward the real happiness that we are forever seeking, but just not understanding where it is or how to get it. The story of Krishna's appearance within this world, just by understanding it, you will be completely liberated. Just by understanding this one little story, as Sutakirti Prabhu was quoting Prabhupada, if you understand one book, you will become a lover of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. And a little later, he said, if you understand one chapter, if you understand one line, if we understand one word, if we actually understand, if we open our heart to really receive the grace that's coming through this divine sound vibration, we'll be liberated through love. See, it's not the type of liberation where we just negate all the dualities and negate all the suffering and negate all the ignorance and negate all the evil and violence and everything else in this world. It's by awakening. Not negate, but it's by awakening the most positive experience of love for the supreme, all-beautiful, all-lovable God. That's what it means to understand. And that's
yayatamam abhyante tamstabhavatat.
That's what Krishna's telling us. If we hear with an earnest desire for that love, for that devotion, with a spirit to serve, not to exploit, with a spirit to overcome the mind and our egoism and selfishness, if that's really why we're hearing, then Krishna will reciprocate and give us that experience. Because according to our desires, according to our aspirations, Krishna will reciprocate and reveal himself accordingly. In the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is described how yada yada hi dharmasya grandirbhavati. The Supreme Absolute Truth, the Father, the Mother of all living beings, descends into this world again and again and again to reestablish the true principles of religion, to remind us who we are and what we really want, and our relationship with each other and with Krishna in the center. Through so many teachings, through so many activities, the Lord has descended. But on very rare occasions, Krishna reveals his original divine supreme form. Chaitanya Charitamrita gives us a glimpse into Krishna's mind. That out of mercy and love and compassion for all beings, I descend again and again. And generally people worship me as almighty, the all-powerful, with great reverence, sometimes even with fear. But what gives me the greatest satisfaction is when love is not crippled by the reverential supremacy and power of God. When our love is invoked through the intimacy of the sweetness and the beauty of God. Srila Prabhupada gave the example. A judge is in the courthouse, and when he's sitting on the bench, he can't just go and say, good to see you. If you do, you'll get put in jail. It's contempt of court to disrespect the judge. You have to say, Your Honor. Yes. Even the lawyers will say, Your Honor. Now, when the same judge is with his friends, do they say, Your Honor? You know, at the country club together, joking and talking. And when the little 3-year-old boy, born at the judge, Srila Prabhupada explained there was one very powerful person in India, and a very, very affluent leader of another country wanted to see him. Secretary said, this leader of a nation has come to see you. And he said, tell him I'm in a very important meeting. He has to wait. So he's waiting and waiting and waiting. Finally, he kind of looked through the door to see, what is this important meeting? And he saw this man, this very influential person, with his little son. He was playing the role, the man was playing the role of a horse, and the little boy was riding on him. He said, go faster, go faster. He's going faster. So with the little child, that's the way the judge is. This child is not saying, Your Honor, go faster. And the wife, when the judge comes home from a whole day in the courtroom, she said, it's your turn to take out the garbage. Now, which is more intimate? Your Honor, or take out the garbage? he's finding more pleasure taking off the garbage for his wife than he is, you know, giving freedom or punishment to the people who come in his place. So intimacy, God is the supreme judge, he's the supreme creator, maintainer, annihilator of everything that exists, and we could love him in that sense. But as Krishna, as Maharaj just explained, he reveals himself in ways that awaken the most intimate and sweet love. And he reveals his own intimate sweet love for those who approach him. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna decides to personally come to the world to reveal these pastimes of the spiritual world, to give us a chance to enter into these pastimes of sweet, intimate love. And Srimad Bhagavatam, briefly we will give a summary of how Krishna comes to the world. When he comes, all the other avatars, all the other incarnations of God that have ever come or that are ever existing, they all are included within Krishna. This Puna avatar, the full avatar. In a place called Mathura. It was the kingdom of a great emperor named Surasena. And his son was Vasudeva. He was to marry a princess of the name Devaki. Because they were both of royalty, it was the confluence of two very, very powerful, royal, distinguished families. The wedding ceremony was joyful, full of so much color and festivities, wealth too. At the end of the ceremony, Devaki was to go back to Vasudeva's house. And her cousin brother, because in India, cousin is the same as a brother or sister. That's how close the families are. Sometimes I tell the story, I was once in Kurukshetra, which is the place the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. It's also the place of the Mahabharata war. It's a holy place. And I was staying, whenever I go there, I always stay with this family. There's five sons. And all the sons have wives. And the husbands and the wives, they all have between two and four children. And every evening we would gather, they all live in the same house together. Cook for each other, eat for each other, take care of each other. And one time, every night we would gather in the living room. And there's like 10, 12 adults, plus their grandparents. And then there's like about 20 children of different ages. And I was, first time I was there, I wanted to know who's related to who. They all look the same. I know that's my prejudice, but I don't know. But they're the same family, so they have very similar characteristics. So I said to one of the children, I said, you know, who's your mother and father? And she said, all of them. I said, I know that. So we don't make such distinctions. All my, you know, what we call uncles and aunts are their mothers and fathers. She said, we don't make distinctions, uncle, aunt, mother, father. They're all my mothers and fathers. They all treat me with the same love. I asked another, well, who's your mother and father? I said, all of them. They love their brothers' and sisters' children as much as they love their own children, and the children love all the adults as much as their own parents, because they're all there for each other totally. It's not a matter just of the biology. It's a matter of the reciprocation of respect and love. Very good unification. That's the way it was in those days. So Kamsa was the brother of Devaki. And he was so happy. He's seeing his sister get married to such a qualified, wonderful man, and the sister was so beautiful and so happy, and he just wanted to make her happier. And even though he's a royal prince, Kamsa says, I will personally drive you home in my chariot, and I will drive you. This is very special. Just like a lot of very, very powerful, wealthy people in New York City have a chauffeur. Yes. Well, in those days, they had a charioteer. Kamsa said, I want to personally drive just to make you happy. What an honor that was. Such a powerful prince, about to be a king. He's going to drive the chariot for us. What a... They were so deeply moved by that. And it was, as he was pulling away from the marriage festivities, people were singing and dancing and blowing conch shells and horns and musical instruments and showering flowers on each other and laughing, and it was such a festive occasion. And Kamsa was driving and smiling, and Devaki and Vasudeva together, just married. Suddenly, the nature of the world. Padam padam yad vipadam patesh. There are so many varieties of how things could suddenly change in this world. We all have that experience. A voice thundered from the sky. The voice said, Kamsa, you are a fool. Now, Kamsa was one of the most powerful men on earth. He was a yogi. And he used his yogic siddhis for physical, mental strength. The scripture says that each of Kamsa's arms had the strength of 10,000 male elephants. Now you think it's impossible. But you only think that because you can't do it. And nobody you know can do it. But I just to humble ourselves, if an ant thinks that you could lift this table, the ant will say, impossible. No one could lift the table. So compared to Kamsa, who has these yogic powers, we're like little ants. And what we think is possible or impossible is just coming, you know, I'm not a strong person, I'm an old guy, and I'm lifting the table, but ants can't do it. So these are realities. These are true stories. But they also have deep messages. And when you have that much power, and you have that much wealth, and you have that much fame, if somebody calls you a fool, it really hurts. If you used to be calling a fool, it doesn't really bother you. But for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So, just the beginning line. Kamsa, you are a fool. Kamsa, you wanted to kill that person. How dare you say that? But the problem was, it was a voice from the sky. There was no one to be seen. So he froze. The next words
You fool!
You are taking such nice care to drive your brother and your sister.
But you do not know the eighth child of your sister is going to kill you. That was all.
Suddenly, Kamsa changed from being the most affectionate brother who just wants to make his sister happy. He grabbed her by the hair, jerked her head up, drew a sword, and was about to sever her head. Vasudeva just got married to her. He loved her. He was shocked to see this sudden change. This is a very, very instructive story. It's like sometimes we give the example of the good dog and the bad dog. We have a divine nature, and we have also a very, very exploitative, selfish nature. It's within all of us. And which one we feed by the choices we make and the practices that we cultivate is what's going to make either the good dog or the bad dog strong. And the other one. So here's Vasudeva, a gentle sage, and here's Kamsa, who for the purpose, he appeared to be such a gentle, loving, kind brother. But as soon as there was a threat to his own egoistic conceptions, he went to the extreme of ready to kill without the slightest second thought or regret. It's very important that through association, we bring the best out of ourselves and bring the best out of each other. Vasudeva started speaking really nice philosophy to Kamsa. He said, please, don't kill your sister. You have such a good reputation in the world for now and forever. Your reputation is going to be totally destroyed. You want to do this? You're going to die anyway. We shouldn't commit any immoral activity just to preserve something that is going to die in any case. The minute you are born, Vasudeva said, the process of dying begins. Forever with every rising and setting of the sun, one is going to get closer to death. But for one who utilizes their life for hearing and chanting and loving service of the Lord, with every rising and the sun, setting of the sun, we're one day closer to eternal life. He explained the nature of the soul, how it is eternal, how it's unborn and undying, and how just as a person who walks put one foot down, and while you put one foot down, you lift another foot up. Yes? That's the analysis of Vasudeva for walking. So similarly, we give up one body and take another, and we give up that body and take another. So when the inevitable is about to come, why should we degrade ourselves? Why should we degrade our very souls? Before God, before the world, before history. But Kamsa, he was so much impassioned by this envy of his sister, that because of her, he's going to die and suffer. He was determined to kill her. Vasudeva tried everything he could to stop it. He was speaking philosophy, logic, sociological reasons,
but Kamsa couldn't hear. Sometimes when we're affected, either our lust or our anger or our envy, it's like fire. And if somebody comes and says, gives you good advice, you just can't hear it because you're just swept away by the emotion.
Finally, Vasudeva, he said, there's no fear of your sister. The fear is the child. I promise you, I will present to you every child that is born to us, and you can do anything you want with them. Kamsa knew that Vasudeva was a saintly person, and therefore he would never tell a lie.
Even though Kamsa himself was a chronic liar, he understood that because Vasudeva's whole life was based on the principles of devotion to God, his life was truth.
And as certain as you know the sun is going to rise, he knew that Vasudeva could be depended on.
If he says something, he will do it. He will die, he will lose everything, but he will not do anything immoral.
So Kamsa let them go. And soon after, about a year later, a child was born. And Vasudeva brought the child to Kamsa.
Kamsa was really amazed. You're bringing your child to me. You're such an honest person. You're such a gentle person. And no matter what I do, you're always giving me all respect. I have no harm to be feared of this child. It's the eighth one. You take the child home and enjoy.
But Vasudeva knew that he could not depend on what Kamsa said, because Kamsa was envious.
And because of his envious, he had an uncontrolled mind and uncontrolled senses. And he could not be trusted beyond a certain point. He could be trusted according to times and places that were suitable for him. Integrity is something completely different. Integrity is we live according to the sacred ideals that are the foundation of our life, even in the face of temptation, even in the face of fear, because it's right, it's true. A person who has that integrity can be trusted.
Narada Muni, great saint, he understood Krishna's plan. So he came and told Vasudeva, you know, I was traveling around and I came to an assembly of different sages and rishis and demigods, and you know what I heard them say? That they were all going to take birth in the Yadu and Vrishti and Andaka dynasties for the purpose of planning for the appearance of Vishnu, the Supreme God. And I want to tell you something else, Kamsa. In your previous verse, you were Kalanemi, and Vishnu killed you, and he's coming to kill you again. Just wanted to inform you. Anyway, Kamsa got so mad. He immediately took his father, Ugrasena, who was the king, and put him in prison. Then he took Vasudeva and Devaki, put him in prison bars, put shackles around their legs. And he became the king. And anyone that stood in the way, he would murder.
And he made allies with other kings by defeating them and threatening, if you don't surrender to me, you'll lose everything. So throughout the world, this alliance of people who were extremely envious, arrogant, racist, evil people were ruined.
Vasudev and Devaki had 6 children. They were all killed. Then a 7th child, who was Ananta, the first expansion of Krishna himself, or Balaram, appeared within the womb of Devaki. Krishna then spoke to his Yogamaya potency. There's one divine energy, supreme energy of the one supreme energetic source, Jaimatya Shayata. That source is God, Bhagavan. The energy is spiritual. But according to time, place, and the receptacle where that energy enters, it's going to have a different effect. Just like here we have our electrical outlet. There's one source of energy for this power. If you put a refrigerator in the socket, you get cold. If you put a heater, you get hot. So it manifests in a different way. So there's one pure spiritual energy that is called Yogamaya, Vishnu Shakti. But within this world, to facilitate people who want to live separate from their existence, their own spiritual nature in God, that Yogamaya manifests as Mahamaya. Yogamaya brings us closer to God. Mahamaya covers our relationship to illusion to facilitate our trying to be independent. So the Lord spoke to Yogamaya and said, I want you to transfer Balaram, my first expansion, from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. And then I want you to take birth as the daughter of Yashoda and Nanda and Gokul, and I will enter the womb of Devaki and Mathura in the present. So Rohini was a wife of Vasudev, who was pregnant. And for her preservation, he sent her away from Mathura, away from Kamsa, to be under the care of his very, very best friend and cousin brother, Nanda Maharaj, and his wife, Yashoda. Just a few days ago was Balaram's birthday. On that day, it is celebrated where Yogamaya transferred the child from Devaki's womb into Rohini's womb. It's a wonderful story about it. Hold that on Balaram's. So it appeared that Devaki had a miscarriage. Suddenly there was nothing in her womb. So nobody worried about that. Then Krishna entered into David, into Vasudev's heart. Krishna entered Vasudev's heart, and from his heart, just like the sun, when it casts its rays and light on the moon, in the same way, Krishna was transferred from the heart of Vasudev to the heart of Devaki. It was a divine arrangement. There was no physical action in that conception. It was just the will of the Lord. And then Krishna entered into Devaki's womb and began to grow like a little child. As soon as he came, Devaki became so full of light. The whole prison cell was illuminated. When Kamsa was checking in every day and had his guards, when he found out about this, he said, the 8th child, Vishnu, who's going to kill me, is now entered the womb of my sister. And
and he had guards 24 hours a day watching. As soon as that child was going to be born, he was going to kill it.
On this day of Janmashtami, at midnight, suddenly, everything auspicious happened in the universe. The constellations of the stars, peacocks were dancing, birds were singing, Brahmins were feeling happy when performing their puja, their different forms of ritual, and everything just became beautiful. Every tree in the world, flowers started blossoming, fruits started ripening. And at that moment, in midnight, in the prison cell, the supreme absolute truth, Vishnu, appeared in his majestic form as the controller of all controllers. He was illuminated. Illuminating. He also gave him David. He saw God as our child. They bowed down. And Srimad Bhagavatam explains incredible, wonderful prayers that they offer. After Vasudev offered his prayers, you are the Lord of all creation, maintenance, destruction of everything. You are the knower of past, present, and future. You are the father and mother of every living being, and now you've come as our son. And Devaki, you have appeared in so many different incarnations throughout the ages, and now you've appeared here as our child. She said, at the time of universal annihilation, all you have to do is inhale and the entire creation goes into your abdomen. But you were living in my abdomen for all these months, and now you're born, and I can see you, the Supreme God. But even though she was seeing him in that light, she was his mother, and she had motherly affection. She said, I know who you are, and I know your supreme power, but still, if Kamsa sees that you're Vishnu, he's going to try to hurt you. And in my motherly love, I cannot tolerate that. So please, appear like an ordinary little baby child so that we can hide you. That was her wish. And Krishna said, I will appear as an ordinary little baby child. And on this very night, you should take me across the Yamuna River to Gokul, Vrindavan, and there exchange me with the daughter of Nandinisha. And suddenly, that majestic form of Bhagavan Vishnu turned into tiny little infant baby boy. There are many beautiful stories in relationship to this. Devaki embraced him, gave him some milk for his trip. And he drank it. And then Vasudev, he took the child, but he was in chains. Suddenly the chains loosened. And suddenly the prison cell door opened. And at the same time, all the guards fell asleep. Everyone in the entire kingdom of Mathura was asleep. Yoga Nidra. Except Vasudev and the little baby. He walked out. It was torrents of rain. It's the monsoon season in India this time. And Anantashesha appeared like an umbrella to protect the little baby. And when he got to the Yamuna River, because it was the monsoons, it was really, really a very deep, forceful current is impossible to cross. But the Yamuna River became very quiet and peaceful and became shallow so he could easily cross. And he came to Gokul. And he entered into the place where Yashoda, the wife of Nanda, had just given birth to the Gokul. And he switched up. And Yashoda, she was so tired giving birth, she forgot whether it was a boy or not. Vasudev took the little baby girl back across the river, went back into the prison cell. All of a sudden, all the doors started locking and the shackles went back in his legs. And the baby cried. Just like a little baby. And Kamsa heard the news, and he came down immediately with his sword. And David was, please, this is a girl. I have no fear from a girl. You've killed all my other children. Just let me have this one child. Kamsa ripped the little baby out of her arms, lifted her up, took his sword, slid the child's head. And the little baby infant girl slipped out of his hands, went into the sky, and became Durga, Yogamaya. And she looked down at Kamsa and said, you are a fool. Eighth son who is going to liberate you is already born somewhere else. Why are you causing so much distress to your own beloved sister and brother-in-law? Then she disappeared. Kamsa was pretty sobered up by that. He fell at Devaki and Vasudev's feet and started begging forgiveness. And they forgave him. He was such a corrupted person. He said, I beg forgiveness. Now listen to this. He said, I beg forgiveness for all the suffering and strife I caused you or your children. But please know that everything happens by one's karma. I beg forgiveness, but still it's your karma. Not exactly the kind of forgiveness you're supposed to ask. But Vasudev and David, from the core of their hearts, they forgave him. They said, you're our brother, we forgive you, it's all right. So he let them go, and they went back to their homes. But because of the association he was keeping, this is very much the crux of this story. How important association is. Because we all have a divine side and we all have these selfish and exploitative tendencies. We have the arrogant side. And according to the association we keep, it can bring out either one. In the presence of Vasudev and Devaki, Kamsa actually felt really remorseful. And it became a little saintly in their company because of the voice of Durga when she spoke to him. He was fearful enough to be sober to actually receive their association. This is an important principle. Association may be there. With good association, it's important that we're receptive. And sometimes some traumatic experience makes us more receptive to so he was traumatized. But then he went back to his ministers and other people who just wanted to... The cheaters and the cheated. They just wanted to exploit him. He was exploiting them. Everyone was exploiting each other for their own material acquisitions. So in the association of these people, he again turned corrupt. And he again arrested the very brother and sister that forgave him for all he did, put them in prison, put them in chains, and declared every child that has been born and every child that will be born in my entire kingdom must be killed. This is what he did just to preserve his own conception of his life. Extend that end of human envy could be like that. And we read about it, and we see within the world, in the history of the last 100 years, there have been many people just like that. If they had the power of Kamsa, they would have done even at least that much too. But it's interesting. Kamsa was Krishna's uncle. How is it somebody from such an intimate, loving family of God himself could be like this? In the same way, we're all Krishna's children. We're all divine beings. How could we be like this? How could anyone be like this when we're all children of the same God? That's the power of our free will. Meanwhile, when Yashoda woke up the next day, and Nanda Maharaj came to see the little baby, in Vrindavan, it was a great festival. A wonderful festival. Nandotsava. In Krishna's beautiful pastimes, we find how he liberated Kamsa. He liberated all the greed and strife of the world and established the highest compassion through his teachings and through the beautiful pastimes of love that he manifested. And Srila Prabhupada explained Janmashtami in this way, that it could happen every moment of every day, this celebration, where Krishna, just like he appeared to Vasudeva and Devaki, he can appear within our hearts. We're all, to various degrees, imprisoned by selfishness and illusion. But in that situation, Krishna's there to appear, to give light, to give hope, to give love, to give happiness. Kali Kali Namurupa Krishna. The same Krishna that appears as the son of Devaki and Vasudeva to reveal these most beautiful pastimes of love. Even in a situation that is so difficult, if we just turn to him, and the Lord appears within his names. Wherever we open our hearts to absorb ourselves, this kirtan, or this harikatan, to hear about Krishna, to chant about Krishna, actually Krishna's appearing. There's a little Janmashtami celebration at home to dispel all the darkness and to make us instruments to dispel darkness. I wish you happy Janmashtami.
doors? Should we have kirtan, or should we? Some people are fasting, and some people are not fasting. Those who are not fasting can take prasad. Those who are fasting can fast. either way, we'll have a few minutes of kirtan. Can I tell you a little story?
Yeah.
This morning, I went to Sri Sri Radha Govinda Temple in Brooklyn. And I was thinking how special and auspicious it would be to, on the day of Janmashtami, to offer my prayers to Radha Govinda Dev and Radha Murlidhar. Started with Radha Murlidhar, then went to Radha Govinda, then came back to Radha Murlidhar. And on the way, I crossed the Manhattan Bridge. And this is my realization. That one who on Janmashtami crosses the bridge between Radha Murlidhar and Radha Govinda is a bridge bhasa. Actually, I wasn't expecting you to like it as much as you did. Thank you. That's, you want that bridge to always be.